It's the Tiltcast, episode 629, Truth Serum.
And this week, guys, we talk about Baldur's Gate 3, Final Fantasy 14, and the full release of Abiotic Factor. Stay tuned.
I really hope I don't say anything bad.
Viral videos.
Oh.
And we're back.
Woohoo!
So it's an M-rated show. It's the Tiltcast. We're back.
Yay!
I'm Nos.
I'm Jason.
I'm Rusty.
Yeah, the three of us, you'll get, well, you're going to get some bullshit, some games, some news, and mostly that order. It's, we are not getting the summer I wanted.
No, we are not.
I set up my pool about 10 days before Rusty came over, and after the week that he left, I have not been able to jump back in because it's been too cold.
Too cold?
Yeah.
Are you shitting me?
It's been in the 70s. It is 77 outside right now.
Yeah, no shit.
It felt like 108 degrees when I was there.
Oh, yeah, and then that was the last of it.
And then I brought the cold, or I left the cold there when I left.
Yeah.
We had a cold front come through last Tuesday.
And it just hasn't stopped.
And with rain, like, it rained or drizzled, like, almost every day last week.
You guys are complaining about this? Normally in August, it is like the devil's frying pan.
I wanted in Oklahoma. I would like to have used the pool more.
I get that, but I think if I was still in Oklahoma, I would have traded 70-degree days for jumping in the pool any day of the week.
I spent $100 getting that thing set up.
I don't have any money in it, so I get that. But still, I mean, I would have greatly preferred having chilly weather. I mean, 70 degrees in Oklahoma is considered chilly, I suppose.
I mean,
in fact, we've got warmer days forecasted for October than we do currently for September.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean anything. So it might get 84 tomorrow. It might be 85 Wednesday. After that, yeah, we're not going to hit 90 again this year. Which, again, not the worst thing in the world, except for when you want to sit outside and soak in the pool. It's, that's not happening. Like, I'm literally just thinking about next weekend just draining it. Like, what's the fucking point? Spending electricity every day filtering that stupid motherfucking thing.
Having a pool up north is even more useless. So, I mean, I completely understand. It's just way easier just to go to a lake around here because, A, the lakes aren't brown, and B... if you had to wait for warm weather to actually jump into a pool, yeah, you're really boned around here.
It is annoying.
Yeah, I'm sure there's plenty of hot tubs up there, though.
Yes, there is definitely enough hot tubs up here to... people are jumping into the fucking hot tubs in the middle of winter time. So
plenty of soup du jour.
Hey, look, Maine.
The plan was is after you left, Rusty. I used to jump in every day and soak, like after work or after I worked out or whatever. Not a single chance. No reason to even like go in and like vacuum the pool or any of that stuff. Like it's just been. It's a pain in the ass. So, like, at this point, there's not a day. I had planned on going through about mid-September. Rocklahoma, the year that me and Jason went, which was, what, 2 years ago now at this point, Jason?
Yeah.
Like, yeah, what was it, like 95 that whole weekend?
Fuck, heat index is over 100, bud.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So that's what I was counting on. I remember that specifically for this specific time of year because, you know, that was a point of reference for me to remember how hot it was. And nowhere close to that. Like, even at night, like, it was hot. I remember drinking gallons of water while I was up there and wondering how people were surviving and not just getting alcohol poisoning from being so hot and dehydrated. I bet hangovers at Rocklahoma were crazy. But this year, Rocklahoma sucks. The only thing I think I would have saw was Alice Cooper and Marilyn Manson, and I don't even know if that was concurrently at the same time, so who knows. But, yeah, it was the amount of rain, too. I was looking at, like, the amount of rain. Like, we had a stupid wet June. Like, we had, like, 30 inches of rain in June. It was something stupid like that. Like, no joke. Like, some days, like, 3 or 4 inches. Like, massive flooding, everything else. So, this whole summer has just been quite literally a wash.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry that the summer's been a wash, dude. It's been halfway decent for me, but that's just me, I guess.
Oh, yeah, like, there's been parts that have been good, right? Like, Ebony over and doing our tri-birthday thing, that was fun, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in general, like, you know, I'm going to deal with my grandma's house every other day for a month and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel wore out. So, like, having a three-day weekend right now, because I'm off tomorrow, you know, is actually quite nice.
I have a four-day weekend.
Did you take off Friday?
No.
You took off Tuesday?
I have Tuesday off, but it's not for fun. I got a phone call from the dentist's office. They had a cancellation, so on Tuesday, I get to have all of my wisdom teeth removed.
Woo! Oh,
yay. Yeah, all of at the same time. Isn't it great?
Are they going to put you under, or are they going to numb you down and then pull them out? Because I can tell you what that's like.
Put me under. They gave me instructions for general anesthetic, so I'm probably going to be out.
I remember when I was 18, I remember they gave me something that numbed my gums quite a bit. Like, I didn't feel pain, but I could feel pressure. And that feeling of having the tooth pulling out of your jaw is, like, next level weird. And then there's this, like, little suction noise that pops out. And it required so much pressure from the dentist that he had to put his foot on my chest as he pulled.
Oh, dude. Oh, dude. No, thanks.
It's like he had my head, like, I want to say it was in some kind of, like, stabilizing thing. And then he had his foot on my chest and on part of the chair to pull my teeth out. I pulled four, like, all at the same time. It was intense. And then I remember going home. I don't remember the conversation. I just remember my mom telling me it was pretty wild. Yeah, and this was the day before people recorded stuff on their phone, so I'm sure that would have been a viral video.
Ugh. Well, that's what I'm worried about. Like, I'm going to go.
Is your mom taking you?
My mom's taking me.
You should totally have her record what you to say.
No, I really do not need that.
I really wish I had your mom's information.
Look, I know that they dose you up with essentially truth serum at this
truth serum.
It is the same chemicals, right? It is truth serum. So I really hope that I don't say something untowards.
Crystal and I will be messaging your mom then.
No.
Tammy loves us.
No.
Yeah, Tammy loves us, and she will give us the comic relief.
I really don't need any of that in my life at all.
I feel like there might be something quotable we could use at the intro of every episode.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I really hope this doesn't happen. I thank you for unlocking a whole new fear.
So, Jason, are you eating gummy worms? Like, your lips are like 50s lipstick red.
Doritos.
Like, do you, is it like clown makeup red to you too, Rusty?
Oh yeah. Dude.
Like, part of that might be, OBS's fucking color enhancement filter. Hang on.
Are you running this through OBS? How many licks does it take?
very red. Anyway.
I guess for the casual audience listener, I know a lot of you guys listen on Spotify. That's our primary platform, honestly. We are going to go to a video format eventually, and so something you probably don't know about us is that we are incredibly cautious when we do things, which means that we try things over and over again. So I'm assuming, Jason, you're recording again to check sync.
Yuppers.
So we've been trying to test out, like, I recorded it on my machine, and it did pretty good. We had some weird issues last week with Rusty's video sync, to be honest with you, but we're gonna change up the format a lot. You'll get some long form episodes, but you're gonna get a lot more short form content since, you know, the listener base is a little younger than we are, because we're a bunch of old fuckers.
You know,
we grew up in this. We were molded in it.
All right, Bane.
Yeah.
We grew up with the technology.
We did grow up. We did. He merely adopted it. But I'll give you a little insight as to how this all works. I know, Jason, you got a new monitor. You got a pretty good deal on that. Like, I was literally looking at that because having one monitor for everything while we record is a little bit difficult sometimes. So you got a...
Yeah, especially considering the new format we're considering.
Yeah, monitoring the video and the audio at the same time is kind... Not impossible, but cramped. Because this monitor is like, what, maybe 19 inches?
It was small.
Yeah, it's small.
It's
small when I got it. So...
Yeah, I'd considered... you know, when you see dumb things you want to waste money on, there's a... Like a 57-inch curved monitor that's made by Samsung, I think.
Get after it, dude. Like, seriously.
It's like $1,200. And I thought about that. I was like, man, I could put like three windows on that. It'd wrap around. I don't even know where I'd put it, to be honest with you. That was like the last factor is like, where would I put it if I have everybody around the table? Like, I'm going to need to mount it. And I could mount it on the wall back there and then just have everything right there.
That is, don't you?
What is what?
That is the big daddy new version of the same panel that's in that Alienware OLED.
Yeah, I think
that everybody loves.
I think Alienware is more style over substance and price over substance nowadays. Like when we were growing up, Alienware was like the thing to get. I say growing up, like in our 20s, so 15 years ago, Alienware was the thing to get, and they got bought out by like Best Buy. And it's
got bought out by Dell.
Yeah, and it's just been like a slightly better version with a higher price tag on everything.
Yeah.
And then Dell got bought by HP, and things got even weirder.
Yeah, I think nowadays you can pretty much build. Building a computer in 2025 is not even close to the same as building a computer in 2000. And I'm not going to go into the whole mess of that, but It's so plug and play nowadays.
Yeah, you like, don't really need to
have you don't even much. Have to think about it. Like, it's yeah, so fucking easy.
In the way of like
BIOS.
What you need to have as far as skill is troubleshoot. Like a lot of newer shit happens. So for instance, like if you're building a PC these days, yes, the hardware is plug and play. But you're putting 64 gigs of RAM into an AMD, you know, AMD machine, and you know, it's a relatively new AM5 processor. You get the right, you know,
it's worth
you get all the stuff right in it, and then you power it on for the first time, and nothing goes on your screen, you know, and it doesn't seem like it's posting properly. And that is okay, where the newbies start to.
Right. There's a little bit of, like, if you've never built one before, have somebody with you that has built one. But, like, honestly, compared to how it was several years ago, right, like, it really is super plug and play. Like, everything's very labeled. Everything's very logical. Like, it's not hard at all. I realize that this particular crew has a lot of experience doing it.
Yeah.
But most PC enthusiasts, I feel like, do have a decent amount of, if you've grown up doing it, and I really do mean grown up, like the last 25 years I've been building PCs, it is not anywhere near as hard. When I was built my first PC, like in the 90s, yeah, that's dating me, so that I could play Final Fantasy 9, or is it 8 or 9? I can't remember, the one with Quistus in it. But anyways, came in like 9 DVDs. And I really wanted to build it. I remember cobbling together parts from an old, what was the one of the cow?
That would have been
Gateway, right?
That was Gateway. Yep.
Remember, I cannibalized a bunch of parts off my grandpa's Dell because he had bought a new one, or Dell, Gateway. So I grabbed the case off of that. Obviously, that time it was a CD drive. I put in a CD burner drive in that, and I remember the RAM was really slow, so I bought new RAM. I couldn't tell you what kind of RAM it was at this point, but I remember having to go at that time to the computer store to figure out what RAM was compatible with that chipset and that motherboard, and bringing the whole thing in and being like, hey, I'm not 100% sure what RAM goes in here. And he had a book that listed out like different very specific models, right, that would work with that board. Like, he had a compatibility book that was in a 3-ring binder that he had printed out so he could figure out what RAM would go in it. And so I bought RAM, and I don't remember how much it was. We're talking about gigs. I want to say this was like 512 megabytes of RAM, and that was pretty awesome back then. And remember getting a Voodoo graphics card. And I remember I just bought my car, and I went to Arby's. I worked at Arby's, and then I worked doing siting. I saved up several months, and I want to say that Voodoo card cost me like $250. Installed the Voodoo card, and then my power supply wasn't quite powerful enough. And modular power supplies weren't a thing back then, so I had to find a power supply that had a – I don't know if it was still a – was it an 8-pin connector back then? I don't remember, but you know, it was like, it didn't have the right power connector for a power supply or for a video card. So I had to buy a different power supply that had that connector on it. Right.
Oh yeah. One of the very first,
cause they weren't modular. They were just, they had so many plugs on them.
Yeah. So I remember like,
yeah, back in the day of the proprietary power supply.
Yeah. And I remember I put another hard drive in it.
Still technically happens, right? Like on the HP super. And Dell pre-builts still have like...
Yeah, they don't want you to expand it at all. You've got to deal with the hand you're given. So like nowadays, though, it's just like, all right, so you can get a PC part picker, right? And then plug everything in that you're wanting, like the specifics, and then kind of roll through the different brands that you want. And then use that as your shopping list for Newegg, right? And then just go and buy it. And now, because I'm just familiar enough with what I want, the only thing I really checked when I was doing the last upgrade was just RAM compatibility, right? Like I looked at the motherboard, what RAM it worked with, right? And then use that to figure out which configuration I wanted. And I couldn't find a pure white version of that Corsair that I put in there, so I ended up, or that G-Skill that I put in there. Did I put G-Skill or Corsair? I can't remember. But anyways, I'd gotten 64 gigs of RAM for Lightroom, basically, that has fucking LED bullshit on it. Instead of getting all white RAM. It looks neat. Like, whatever. But yeah. There was not a lot of... Like, at this point, you've been doing it this long, you just kind of, like, throw stuff together, and it's like, that looks really good. This looks like it'll work. And here's where my compatibility points are, right? Like, just essentially RAM to me was the biggest thing, and then making sure I had the right power rating on my power supply. I want to say the one I've got is one of the platinum rating ones, so it's really clean. And it's got a shitload of connections, so I've never had issues with it.
Yeah.
Remember I had that shitty power supply a while back when I first got the 3080, and you were telling me, like, oh, you really need to get another power supply. You really, cause it,
yes.
That's when I went.
That was one of the, you know, one of the ones that was exploding.
Yeah. And you were like, I think you might have that one. And I was like, you might be right.
One of the Gigabyte 850 watts.
Something like that. Yeah. And it was
a Gamers Nexus found out was just like, the overcurrent protection was failing, and they were just catching on fire.
That's when I went ahead and spent like $250 and got a really decent power supply, and I was like, this will last a while.
Yeah.
Which it has. That's been that case for about 4 or 5 years now or something.
Yeah, I thought a 1,000-watt power supply would last a while, but nowadays you have to have like a 12 or a 13 or something like that if you want to run like a, you know, a 5,000 series card.
If you have anything above a 70 class NVIDIA card or a,
not necessarily,
or a 600 class AMD video card, yeah, you gotta have like a 1,000-watt power supply at a minimum.
I have 1,000, and I want to say I have 200 watts of 200 watts of headroom on mine, even with a 4090.
What I've run into, with that is just burst power draw is all. So most of the time, the machine's going to be idle, right? But you're going to have your burst power draws going, like whenever you load up something stupid crazy, it's going to hit your power supply real hard. For a short period of time, and that's when you start running into issues. So, and I only really run into that with like render machines at work. So, you know, or if I'm trying to load up a video game, normally it's on initial load of a video game that's, you know, that has that problem. So I don't run into that issue. I tend to always have about 200 watt headroom, which means I end up spending more money than I really need to. The two machines that I got to work, got to play with at work that included a 5090. Yeah. I made sure I had plenty of power available to it. And then I started looking at it. If you do the calculations for like maximum power draw on those, 1300 watt power supplies, right? You start doing the calculations. If you start to calculate that into amps, and you start worrying about putting it on the same circuit, because it's,
I wonder about that.
Yeah, it is possible to
you
over,
think about over it.
Amp your circuit breakers and pop a circuit breaker.
I've got this PC on the same circuit, right? Because it's just on the other side of the wall. And on the other side of the wall, I've got my TV, my stereo, my amp, and my PC all on that other side of the wall.
Yeah.
Well,
it's it's not going to be a problem because you're generally only in one place, right? So you're only going to pull, you're only going to pull maximum amps off of something that you're actively using.
Yeah, the one that's in the other room is on right now, but it's not like doing anything.
And that's the thing, you know, even though you may have like a 1,000-watt power supply in there, the chances of it actually pulling enough power, you know, it never pulls the full amount. That's why you buy the Platinums. In fact, if you look at what the idle power draw is off of the wall, your Platinum is your efficiency, right? So it's how efficient it converts your wall power into, you know, watts that, you know, that the computer can use.
Yeah.
So
I watched a what would be really boring to some people video about the differences in the grades of power supplies at one point. Might have been a Jay's Two Cents video, to be honest with you.
And it's possible. Yeah. And it's just, you know, if you have a higher efficiency, you know, power supply, it's not going to pull as many watts, you know, at idle, and it's not going to be nearly as, there's a lot of factors, but one of the big things is it's not wasting energy, you know. So so do you going back to my example, do you know why an AM5 board with 64 gigs of RAM would take a long ass time to boot?
Memory training.
You betcha.
And not AMD AMD's DDR5 is a bitch for memory training.
Not many people on their first build, especially if it is their first build, would know that is happening, and
unless they've watched a bunch of Gamers Nexus, Jay's Two Cents, or Lightest Tech Tips.
Nope, yeah, it is considerably faster now that I've been running it a while.
Yeah, it is one of those things that will get people be like, they turn it on and they just expect it to work. No, it depends on how much memory you put in there. 64 gigs of memory training, that can take a while. Sometimes upwards to like 10 minutes.
I can tell you that it does get faster over time, though.
Yeah. No, after it completes its initial boot, you can go into your BIOS and go into fast boot, and it won't have to do memory training unless you make changes to your sticks. So that, and don't turn on XMP right away. In fact, most of the time, turning on XMP, unless you're like a power user, isn't even required. So
I don't notice a huge difference with it on. And honestly, the one thing I didn't research with mine is that particular set won't do XMP with all of the slots filled with that particular model of RAM. Because I was a little bit impatient and bought all that stuff, and I'm not going to spend $130 again on RAM. So, but it's not completely necessary. I think with what I got right now, it runs natively at 4,000 megahertz, which is barely slower than the speed I had it at before on the DDR4. But I've got a lot more. I've got double the headroom that I had before. So, whatever.
Nice.
So anybody here been, Jason, have you been playing anything this week?
I have.
No. You played a ton.
Yeah. It's going to be all on me again.
Actually, I had a hard time getting into anything at all. And then, a couple weeks ago we were talking about, Rusty have been talking about maybe starting another playthrough of Baldur's Gate 3 now that Cam had gone through it. And, it just sounded good. Yeah. So I started like my fourth playthrough of Baldur's Gate. Just because I could. And now with this new monitor I grabbed, God, it looks even better.
Yeah.
It's amazing how even a cheaper IPS panel just with a wide color gamut looks.
Upgrading your display every once in a while is that is, it's key. Like when I moved from
well, it's just everything's gotten so much better the last few years since OLED was introduced. Even the IPS LED panels have gotten way better with colors than they used to be.
That, and some of them are actually using better backlighting for more vivid colors.
What was really getting to me on the Samsung I bought a couple years ago was that the edge lighting was starting to flicker. Mm. So I was like, this can't be my primary gaming monitor much longer.
That to be your secondary till it dies. Monitors last a surprising amount of time.
They do. Just when you start noticing things like edge flicker, you just gotta start being careful, right?
Honestly, some TVs do too. I'm literally using a 15-year-old 1080p TV as my second monitor in the living room. This has got really good contrast on it. Detail's not quite there, but it looks good enough as a second monitor, I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. Once I moved over to OLED, I can't game on anything else here. There's a big difference with like HDR versus non-HDR, the OLED being freaking nice and bright, good contrast. I'm spoiled now. I can't go back.
If I could afford OLED, I would.
And that OLED, I
can't afford OLED.
The OLED TV in the living room looks good.
Like the cheapest OLED monitors are like $450.
Yeah, honestly.
I mean,
I have thought about it, but I mean, the problem is none of my TVs really need to be replaced. Like, that's both my living room and my bedroom TV are fucking 4K LCDs that both have local dimming zones that, they still look decent enough, you know. The only reason you can tell a difference between them and OLEDs just the fact that the pixels actually turn off, so you actually get blacks.
I can tell you, never regretted spending the money I did on that LG in the living room.
Yeah.
It's been great for
gaming. I regretted spending the money on this Alienware.
It was overpriced.
It was overpriced by about $100. Honestly, looking at, looking at the comparable like Samsung version of of this, there was only about $100 difference.
Samsung has good displays.
Yeah. And
like honestly, Samsung and LG are like the two that I would almost always go with at this point.
I mean, I get that. It's just this one, I think, was on sale for, it had a sale going on that made the difference. And yeah, that made the difference. Sorry, something just happened. Oh, God. Anyway.
That came from your side, didn't it?
It did.
That hit the microphone, buddy. The one thing about a high quality microphone is it picks up everything. Thought maybe somebody's phone was vibrating.
That was my ass.
Was it a trombone?
Oh,
maybe
boy.
A tibia.
I have some heavy duty, like, noise dampening in here. So, I need a moment. If somebody take over, I forgot what I was talking about.
OLEDs.
Yeah, OLEDs. Oh, yeah. Well, let's skip around a little bit. What have I been playing?
What have you been playing?
I lied last week unintentionally. I said I was going to beat Shin Megami Tensei or Death Stranding. And that didn't happen, and I can tell you why. I'm at the point in Death Stranding where I get that point where I don't want to finish the game because it's been such a good journey. And so I'll play something else. And then I know it's going to be heavily narratively driven, so I know I can't play that while I'm talking to my girlfriend. So then I'll play something else. I played a lot of Shin Megami Tensei. Blah, 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 blah. And I got a little burned out. So I put that on the side, and I was looking through, and I sent you guys a text. Let's say it was like Tuesday. And what I didn't know is, so I kept getting a Steam advertisement that like the Cold Fusion update is available for Abiotic Factor. And I noticed it had been released on Game Pass. And Abiotic Factor is a love letter to Half-Life plus survival game, basically. But it's driven by the narrative. And I was like, okay, well, let me see why is this now on Game Pass? And then I was like, oh, 1.0 released last month. So it's August, right? So right now it's the last day of August. I was like, I need to jump on that. Like I told myself I was going to play this when it hit 1.0. And I erased my save, started from scratch because I needed to know what was going on. And it's not, it can be fairly challenging, but it's not always that bad. Like, once you get a good rhythm going on, it's not too bad. But it's a pretty chill game. The narrative thread is a lot stronger in the 1.0 release. Essentially, I'd gotten as far as I could go, I think, in the last time I played it, which was about a year or so ago. And right now, it's in a spot where you can, well, obviously, you can go all the way to the end. So I've gotten a lot farther in the game. I've put probably 25 hours into it this week, on top of everything else, right? Like, I've had enough time to do that. I spent all day yesterday playing it. I spent all morning this morning playing it. And it's just a good game. I will tell you that every time you kind of change a story beat, the game does get considerably harder. And what I mean by that is, so like, basically, this is how it starts off. You're a scientist, right? And there's an event kind of like there is in Half-Life 1, for any of you guys that remember that, right? It's a big event that happens and aliens like go through the dimensional portal into Half-Life. Of course, by Half-Life 2, then like the aliens and the shadowy government force have taken over the world. It's not in Half-Life 2 territory. It's more Half-Life 1. So you're still in a facility and you have to cobble together supplies from the environment to build up defenses to survive. And as the game progresses, like there's a lot of finite resources. You have to figure out what's an infinite resource, right? So for example, like there's water in all of the sinks when you start off, right? And that water starts to diminish as you use it. You use it for all sorts of things. You use it for food, you use it to wash yourself. You use it for your own water, right? And so, like, at a certain point, all of those water sources are gone, and then you're stuck with the infinite sources. So what are the infinite sources? Well, there's, like, a fountain that's in the middle of the, like, the first area that's an infinite source. There's a pool that is an infinite source, right? There's a couple of fountains in the starting area that are infinite sources. And so you have to like kind of plan around that. Like there's a certain finite amount of like food in the game. One thing I did notice is that it looks like the vending machines resupply after a while, but the vending machines only have a certain amount of food in them, like at a time, like they refill a very small amount of your health bar. So you need that health bar up because you get a negative status debuff, right? And you can starve to death. And then when you die, it puts you at like medium stats for everything, like medium hunger, medium sleep, medium pooping, right? You also have to take a dump. That is a thing in this game, or you shit your pants. So you need to know where bathrooms are at when you get the brown icon. You know you got to go take a dump and go play the dumping minute game. But you cobble together all these resources and you kind of figure out how to make things a little bit more infinite. And it encourages you to continuously kind of like move your base every now and then. So like I start off, I played it a couple times before, and there's a like security room, right by the starting area that's relatively safe. And I will build that up with like a fridge and it's got a pre-built-in stove and some other things. But the problem with that base is it's so far from everything that it takes forever to get resources and come back. Like the next big thing for me to upgrade or find is plans for a cart. So like you can get a rolling flat cart and you can stack a bunch of shit on there. And so that's something that I generally try to get an upgrade for. And then for food later on, you're killing aliens and making alien steaks, but it's all irradiated food. So the best thing to do with that is to turn it into soups. And I guess somehow by making it a soup, it takes away some of the radiation. I don't know how that works. But like you're always dealing with a certain amount of radiation by grilling alien, you know, alien pork chops or whatever it is. You do get to a point where some of the things that used to freak you out, like, aren't as bad. And it kind of uses an oblivion leveling system. So, like, the more you run, the more you level up sprinting, right? Your stamina. The more you get hit, the more you build up your fortitude. The more you use a certain type of weapon, you know, the more that you build that up. So, kind of depending on your playstyle, that levels up and unlocks perks based on you just doing the thing. So there's nothing that you actually have to actively put points in. Like if you need to build up your strength, well, carry slightly more than what you normally can carry. And if you're always at a heavy space, you can't sprint as fast, but you're making your character stronger, right? So that way I can carry a fridge and take it back to the base and install a fridge. But, you know, you're always kind of building systems in parallel, like figuring out how to get everything on battery power was like one thing. And I've got all of these like traps that are around both entrances to my base. There's a really good spot on the second level that's pretty accessible from the first area where you've got a, after you get the hacking upgrade, which you get by building it. There's a spot with a door that shuts. It's like those mall doors, the roll down doors, and it rolls that down across the front of the area. The back of the area has got a shitload of lockers, so you can store stuff in there if you wanted to. It's got a bathroom built into it. It's got an area up top that you can use to make a whole like galley kitchen, which is what I've got going right now. And then I've got like the whole bottom area as a whole crafting area for outfitting my character. And I get stuck in a loop of like just clearing everything out. Like there's an office area that I've almost taken everything from. But the narrative hook is like, Every time things get worse, because as you progress things, you basically unlock more portals to this alien dimension, and more creatures invade, and those creatures suck more than the ones that you were fighting before. Things start to get pretty dicey, and then I'm just like in Half-Life, right? Like there's a shadowy government force that's invaded this basically Black Mesa, right? They're trying to kill everybody that's there so that there's no evidence. And those guys are really hard. Like they're wearing bulletproof armor. They all got helmets. You got to knock the helmet off to kill them. And initially, it does take quite a bit to kill them. Like, I'm finally at a place where I've got, like, a saw-launching gun that deals with them relatively well. But taking on more than a couple of them is a big deal. Right now, I'm trying to collect their arms, and I really do mean that. By shooting these guys, I'm collecting arms occasionally as a part of my drop rate. When I collect an arm, if I get 8 to 10 of these arms, I can start to equip their weapons, which are DNA locked, and then I can start using their weapons against them. So I'm currently, that was what I was doing before I got on here, is I was farming these soldiers for their arms. But yeah, the further I've gotten in, like there's these events. There's these events that start to happen. So like there'll be a fog event and there's these like fog demon alien things that are fucking tough as shit that spawn in. There's like a radiation event where the whole area gets radiated. And I intentionally have not watched a lot of videos for this. I just kind of like the exploration aspect of it. And there's this particular spot in the warehouse area, which is one of the areas that I've mostly all the way through, that you can hit a button and it clears out the weather event. So like it's in this like lab section. If you click the button, then it clears out the radiation event, the fog event, the weird like portal event. It's pretty wild. But then, you know, like as you go further along, they're like, the game gets harder. It starts sending enemies at you at night. And so it's a good idea to have everything kind of well lit, have battery set up for your traps. Your traps are actually working. And I will tell you that 4 Choppinators at every entrance like makes pretty short work of just about everything so far. Choppinator is a spinning blade that's at an angle that essentially is just like a spinning chainsaw. And it staggers things that hit it. If you put it in the path that they would normally take, more or less, then they're going to get caught up in it. The big old robots get fucked up in it. The soldiers that come get fucked up in it. The aliens that come get fucked up in it. The only thing that still sucks is the portal event happens inside my base, and so you got to fight a bunch of shit inside your base. And it's finally picking up the pace where this stuff's actually pretty hard. But like overall, I had a lot of fun with this. Like, I really like Abiotic Factor. Thought I would be about... I was like, you know, this was kind of close to the end last time. I wonder if I'm getting close to the end. And then I looked up a wiki. I was like, how many enemies are there? There's like... I'm through a quarter of the enemies, so like there's a whole bunch more game where they just throw everything at you at once, like in the next chapter, which I doubt they do. So I think I'm finally getting to a place where I need to pack up my stuff and move my base forward from this very highly secured location, but not ready to do it yet. But yeah, Abiotic Factor, man, it's one of the best crafting games I've ever played, honestly. If you can get past the fact that it has like a cleaned up version of Half-Life 1 graphics, essentially, it is the indie game this year. And I knew like it had a lot of potential when I played it before, but now that it's fleshed out, like it's such a good game. And no, you do not have to play this multiplayer. I've played it single player the whole time. I think multiplayer would be even fun as hell, but you'd have to, like, have, like, the camp mom, right? That would be helpful. Like, it's never... Like, something in other crafting games... Let's talk about that for a second, right? Like, an arc, everything takes so long to do that for your play session, you have to dedicate yourself to something, basically, if you're playing by yourself, right? So, an arc, you would dedicate an hour to, like, crafting a bunch of food or a bunch of a resource, essentially, right? And you'd have to sit there and babysit it. So it encourages multiplayer in that you have people into dedicated roles because everything takes so long to do. Nothing takes really that long to do. And like beyond the first couple of hours of the game, like once you start to get battery power and understand that things are just darker at night. So basically at like 9 o'clock at night, from 9 to 6 in the morning, the power shuts off in the whole facility. So everything goes dark. Like it's just darker. Like the night actually turns into my time that I forage, and during the day is when I do all my production. And then once I got battery power backup on everything, I just do whatever I want, whenever I want. And then the only thing I have to worry about is sleep. I got a perk that makes me sleep a little bit less. So I sleep well every now and then. And most of the time I'm just out doing things. And, like, nothing takes that long. Like, I can make enough food inside of, like, 20 minutes to, like, last me for the entire play session, right? Like, it's going to go bad before I need more food. So I don't ever have to, like, dedicate myself to just doing a thing. Like, before I got on here, I was like, man, I'm running low on water. I'm going to go to the infinite resource. And there's these, like, water coolers. And so my method is to take a big pot and load up a cart full of water coolers and then take it down, drive it down to the infinite water source and fill up all the water coolers and then wheel that back up. And then it takes me about 2 or 3 minutes to get everything back up the stairs in my base. But then from there, I just set up all the water coolers and then boil them. I've got four pots, so I just boil it all in quick succession. And while I'm boiling it, I go and craft a few things. And 5 minutes later, I've boiled all of that water. And then I'm off to doing whatever I was going to do before. And that's enough water. I have way more water than I need right now. I could make a ridiculous amount of soup right now. I need another fridge because I have too much food. And like, I don't actually need that much food for a single character. So I've kind of decided to not be that weird, like loot goblin in every occasion, right? Like, yeah, I have enough food at home. I don't need to chop this monster up for steaks. I'm just going to leave it here because more will spawn in. I have enough food at this point. Like aside from just leveling cooking for whatever reason. So, but yeah, like that's the balance I like about it, right? Like I have plenty of time to go out and explore. Like I did dedicate a full hour of reconfiguring my base yesterday because that just seemed cool. And I wanted to reorient everything. I discovered a recipe for larger boxes. So I, you know, relaid everything out, got little marker boards on the spots where I have everything set up. It's highly organized. When I did cable management my base, because the cable management in this game bugs me a lot. So basically everything has to plug in, right? So semi pro tip, you plug the cable into the back of a battery, right? And one battery is enough to run like two items. So if you got multiple items on the circuit, like throw four batteries in a row and daisy chain them all together. Let them charge up and then take a plug from that and plug it into a power strip. Then power strip out everything. But you need several power strips to get your cables to run straight so that you don't have cables like running across a walkway or whatever. And so I end up making multiple power strips just to make sure my cable management looks nice and tidy. So I don't have, you don't run into them, but you do because I'm a little bit OCD. So I make extra power strips to make it look nicer. Because when you first get started, it looks like an absolute mess because you've got limited resources. But I'd say where I'm at is like mid-game-ish. That I have an efficient system and everything's kind of running smoothly. And really the biggest thing I need to do is like find a better spot to relocate my base to so I'm closer to all the things that I'm doing. Because I have no real reason to go all the way back to where I'm at. Like I need a spot that has... Maybe that's my goal tonight. Relocate the base. I'm too far away from everything. I'm running a ridiculous amount of space away from everything. It's a good game. Talked about it for 10, 15 minutes, right? I like this game a lot. I like this game as much as I like playing Death Stranding. In fact, there's parts of this I like playing better than Death Stranding. I like Abiotic Vector a lot. If any of that sounds appealing, it's on Game Pass for the price of Game Pass. So, nice. Yeah. Anybody else been playing anything?
Man, I have not had a lot of time. I just sat down not too long ago to play a little bit of comfort game, basically just Final Fantasy, and that is all. I mean, haven't really done much. Like, I spent a lot of time this week just doing extra work. Trying to make up some hours, come home, and pass smooth out. So it's, I'm really bored and boring, you know, when it comes, I've been really kind of watching the whole Helldivers 2 thing, because over the last week, it was it launched on Xbox.
So right.
Full on crossplay is now available.
I feel like that's something we could do.
It is something that we can do.
I started downloading the update today.
But that was really the only thing that that I saw that was that even like got my attention. And mainly just because my boss at work or the people at work had said, hey, you should probably pop onto this. I'm like, you know where I'm, you know I'm at work, right? But yeah, it's just been that. I've been super bored, boring, this week. I'm sure there's more shit that I'll be doing over the next couple weeks, but I have to spend, that extra time, making up the extra time because, I'm going to be four teeth less wise, here in a couple days. So I just had to figure that shit out. But yeah, Helldivers 2, I noticed that the ODST, the ODST thing, is really, there's a lot of comparisons between, how the guns load and how they fire between ODST and Helldivers. And it's not exact, but it's pretty close. And they said that the war bond is really nice. So on top of the fact that there's a lot more Helldivers actually playing, the war bond that comes with it was worthwhile too. I'll have to relearn that game completely. I don't remember how to, I don't remember how to die. Kind of a core mechanic in that game is leaping in a direction to avoid damage, or going prone. I don't remember how to. I'd have to look up. I'll look up how to do it. I loaded the game up for maybe a few minutes.
Yeah.
Went into baby's first hell dive, and it was just shooting shit, just to shoot shit, and I quickly realized I've forgotten a lot of the controls, so this is from a person that was regularly doing random hell dive difficulty shit with random people when hell dive was the top end difficulty. Now it's super hell dive. There is one more difficulty on top of hell dive, which, with as crazy as hell dive has gotten or was, I can't imagine what super hell dive is like. Jeez. But yeah, I'd be interested in playing that game again, and getting in on that. I just have to have fucking time. And I spend a lot of fucking time doing the whole adult thing. It sucks.
Well, with that, do we want to take a break?
Yes, please.
All right, yeah,
let's take a break.
All right, we'll be back. Back.
Woohoo.
Yeah. Well, it's that time that we want to talk about news. It's a thing. It's funny, we're just talking about the effectiveness of a Noctua air cooler. So I've got a relatively cheap Cooler Master cooler in this machine, and I sit pretty close. And I say relatively cheap, it's like $30. Definitely does the job. Works great. However, you can hear that fan wind up when I start opening multiple tabs on this machine. Like a rocket ship taking off. And I never hear it on my other computer, and I had to think to it myself. And I was like, oh yeah, I got a Noctua cooler on that one, and that fan makes zero noise. So you don't ever even hear it. And then thankfully there's not any, I haven't noticed any whine from the card either. But now I know what people are complaining about with their fans. Like, if you don't like it, it's worth spending, honestly, double the cost, like $60 or more on a CPU cooler.
Yes. It is.
Noctua's.
Noctua's very, very good. Just for, you know, the fans will still kick up.
But you don't hear them. The only part about Noctua I hate is it's fucking brown. All of their stuff's fucking brown. They don't make any other
colors. Unless you pay the $30 extra to get the black one.
Yep. I've got some Noctua, Chromax Black or whatever the hell they are.
I did not realize that they made another color.
Yes. That came as a very popular demand. So...
Yep, you get Noctua Brown or you get black.
Yep, black, and you can get colored tabs, like the colored vibration tabs. The black ones, that's what I use. And with the CPU coolers, I tend to get the ones that are all blacked out, or, you know, anyway. Because I'm not building a rainbow fart machine for work, that's for sure. People bitch about that. Like you're building a PC for a designer, or somebody that does rendering and shit like that, and they will bitch at you if there is RGB in it. Like, stop looking at the machine and do your work, man. But yeah. Oh shit. It's news time, right? Oh.
It is. So Switch 2 is released, and Elden Ring released on Switch 2, and what did you know? It's actually even worse. So it was previewed at Gamescom, and this is a story from Eurogamer. But they were saying that 30 FPS was bad enough when you were in open world, but if you pulled it out of the dock, it was actually running around 15 FPS.
Oh. Oh, that's unplayable.
That's, we could spend a whole podcast going over why Nintendo has sucked the last 10 years. This is just another reason, right? Like, there are plenty of other handheld solutions out there. I say plenty. I mean, PC mobile gaming is definitely a thing nowadays, and it blows the fucking doors off the Switch 2 right now.
So they're fucking like,
you can play Elden Ring at 40 FPS on your Steam Deck. 40.
Yes.
It's always handheld mode. Now the battery life is still 3.5 hours, and that's why I got a whole nother, battery pack essentially for, one of those, so trick to it, which I didn't know when I was traveling last, you need at least a 30 watt out in order for it to keep up with the battery. So I had an 18-watt out. I basically have a power brick that was for charging phones. Well, I got one of the 45-watt out. And can confirm after playing... what was that game? They Sleep Below... I can't remember. Anyways, there's a game that I like playing on it. It will last a long time. With that extra battery, it lasts about 10 hours. So if you've got like one of those portable battery packs that you take with you when you travel or like to work or whatever, so you can keep your phone charged or whatever, you find one with at least a 30 watt out, like that's what you need in order to keep things going with it. So the extra...
Because the native Steam Deck charger is like 45 watts.
No, it's 30 watts. But the 45 watt was the closest one I could find. I did a lot of...
You're right. I forgot it's OLED that's 45.
But yeah, in general, that's a thing that you can get. Like, it's so moddable, right? Like, use SD cards to expand your memory. Just get a power brick if you need extra battery, right? Like, Nintendo is all about being proprietary. Steam Deck is not. It's kind of like the Android of gaming. But anyways, yeah, just thought that was something to throw out there. If you're why would you get a Switch 2? Get a Steam Deck. And don't play $80 for your fucking games.
Especially since, according to reports, Nintendo can't even get Switch 2 dev kits to developers.
Really?
Yeah. So this is...
This is according to Video Games Chronicle on IGN. Both virtually had the same story. Digital Foundries, during their direct weekly podcast, the hopes or the two hosts, who are developers themselves, both said on the podcast that they've been pulled by numerous developers from other studios that they still can't get a hold of a dev kit for the Switch 2. And that they've been told by Nintendo, just ship it on the Switch 1 and rely on the backwards compatibility.
That seems incredibly lazy.
It seems very very Nintendo. Like, it seems very unprepared. Like, how could you not have a few thousand developer kits ready to go? You know?
Yeah. Again, Nintendo pushing the premium price tag on everything for a subpar product and having a bunch of fucking kiddie games.
They put Criterion. Blue, blue, blue. Proprietary protocols on the dock for the Switch 2. So third-party docks don't work.
Yeah, I wonder if you have
to buy their dock.
I wonder what the charging solution is, or if you could even plug a power brick into it, or is it some like weird configuration where only their power adapter works?
Give Nintendo
I'd imagine
ideas, man. I'm telling you.
I mean, Nintendo is the Apple of console gaming.
And
just saying,
they're surviving only because of their name and some, you know, and Pokemon, essentially.
I've been over Nintendo for 15 years. Like, I've been over Nintendo since, like, I got a Wii U when this podcast started, played it a little bit for Zombie U, right? That game was not that good. Thinking like, oh yeah, this is innovative and groundbreaking. And then after a little while, I was like, okay, well, I'm kind of done with this console. There's not enough games on it. They're not developing a lot of games for it. It's kind of underpowered. And at that time, I ended up playing 360 with all my friends anyway. I was like, all right, well, Wii U, whatever.
Yeah, Nintendo has never put out hasn't put out a power relevant system since
the Super Nintendo or the N64.
N64, I think, was the last time they were pushing boundaries.
They were still using proprietary hardware, right? They were still using cartridges. Remember, they had the memory expander and all that other stuff with it.
Oh yeah, I mean,
and then everything else was using
back then, though.
Right, but everything else was using CD-ROMs, like preparing for the future.
But even PlayStation had like their blacked out discs, and there was still like concerns about piracy, and that was one of the big things why. Nintendo went with their cartridge, you know, setup, is that it was harder to, you know, to make copies of the, you know, of the cartridge. I mean, at that time, obviously ROMs exist, right? But it wasn't as prevalent then as it is now with, you know, ROM reader, you know, software and shit like that, right? So the idea behind, You know, I understood the idea behind cartridges. The sad thing is that they've never really left that mindset. And they're like, oh, we've got to have the cartridge, right? Well, now the cartridge is essentially just an encryption key.
Yeah, right? Aren't they doing this weird thing now where it's a card that has a one use key for it, and then you download the game, and you never use that little card again?
You could do that, or some of them will still require the actual physical cartridge to be in the machine. just as like a hardware verification key.
Right, but then you can't resell it ever again.
That's correct. You can't resell.
There is no such thing as used Switch 2 games now.
Right.
Like, I mean, there's no such thing as used PC games either. But like, at this point, there's no reason
why GameStop ceased to exist.
Right. Well, yeah. GameStop is an outdated business model for video games anyway. They haven't been relevant in a long time. But also, games in general used to be better. Like, there's a lot of fucking slop out there. Which is why I'm praising abiotic factors so much in the beginning segment of this show, because just the quality of games has gone down exponentially.
Well, we've always said, that the only people that are really pushing the boundaries in gaming, it is all coming from the indie sector right now.
Yeah, that was proven by the Game Awards show, right? Like, where so many of the top sellers were indies. And I think a lot of that is there's not a lot of focus group. It's not driven by it's not driven by investors, right? These companies are not driven by investors. They're driven by the developers. And so the developers have an idea, and either it works or it doesn't, right? For every good indie game, there are 300 bad indie games, essentially, right? Yeah. But it's being driven by somebody who has passion versus somebody who's looked at focus group testing to see what might be done. And who knows how effective these – apparently, the last several years, these people that have been looking at focus testing to drive their game development have not been that successful, right? Just not everybody wants to do an extraction shooter, because the ones that are out there are the ones that people want to play, and that's their jam. These are not people that play new games. These are people that play the same old game, will play the second version of that game when it comes out, right? People that play the grandma or their grandpa, MMO game, freaking World of Warcraft, are not gamers. They're World of Warcraft players, right? Most people that play Final Fantasy in the way that your roommate do, that's what they play. They don't play other video games. They're not going to play another MMO. They're going to play that MMO until they're done with it, and that's it. So these focus testing groups have obviously been wrong the last several years, which is one of the reasons why Ubi's been going under, essentially, right? Like, they're two different companies at this point, and why, Activision's not the only thing that sells with them is Call of Duty, right? We're on Call of Duty 72 at this point. It's the indies where a lot of this stuff is really popping right now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and look at, granted, I know they're big ass fucking studio now, but look at Larian.
Yeah, Larian has been a smaller studio for a long time.
They took a huge risk building their team to do Baldur's Gate 3. Granted, they put a lot of passion into the game and it worked for them, but like, that's where the sauce is made right now, is the independent studios.
Yeah, so speaking of stuff like this, which is weird, right now, the biggest gaming platform is a single game. Do you guys have any idea what it is?
Biggest gaming platform
is a single game.
Platform? Roblox.
You are absolutely correct. So Roblox is at 47.4 million concurrent users. Valve's concurrent user record sits at 41.2 million. So Roblox is a bunch of user-generated content. Right, essentially, people make their own games in there, and it's most exclusively thanks to two games: Steal a Brain Rot and Grow a Garden. And there are all these like bullshit games, which is just nuts. That's what kids are playing, right? They're essentially just playing Roblox, more than Fortnite. The problem with Roblox right now, though, is there's a lot of safety concerns. And I know that sounds silly and very, like, boomer of us, right? But there's a lot of child predators that are getting into these games with kids. And there's a lot of really questionable games, you could say, right? Like, because there's their own library of user-generated games in that, right? Like Shower Simulator and weird shit like that. I've been watching a lot of stuff online of people like ducking into these different rooms to see what's going on. And Roblox is cooperating with police, but they're not trying hard to find this stuff. It's because there are other people finding it. But yeah, there's a lot of child predators that are hanging out in a lot of these different games looking for kids to chat up and potentially meet up. And there's been multiple stories, if you just go searching, of child predators meeting up with a kid on Roblox and then meeting him in real life, essentially.
Yep. That's why we keep a close eye on what our kids do.
That's why you should. But, like, in general, like, there's that many kids on, like, people our age don't play Roblox, right? People in their 20s don't play Roblox. Roblox is exclusively like a 12 and under thing, right? And so you get your kid one game, and then there's a shitload of games on there, and then you got Robux, right? Which I forgot what you even use those for, but
I wouldn't even go that far, sir, because my 16-year-old and all her friends fucking
play Roblox.
That's almost all they play.
Yeah. Seriously. God, all these kids are going to grow up dumb as shit.
They play that, they play Warzone, and they play Fortnite.
Oh, God, I'm glad that I grew up when I grew up.
So, yeah,
it's like brain rot central, Jason.
It really is. There's so many different kinds of games out there. The problem I see is this double-edged sword with this, you know, with this, just like you were saying before, you know, indies are, there's one good indie to every 300 bad indies, right? You know?
Oh yeah. There's a Baldur's Gate 3 to every, you know, like 200 or 300 fucking house parties. Right.
But the Roblox games are pretty low quality though, is what I'm getting at. Like, it's very low quality user crowd. Yeah, but it's very low quality user generated content.
So, but with it being, you know, and it doesn't matter. Like, it doesn't matter to these kids. You know, and
I mean, they grew up with fucking Cocomelon. What do you expect?
If you're familiar with the term Skibidi Toilet, then
oh god, you
understand where shit's coming from. Like, it is. There is.
Let's not bring up Skibidi Toilet.
I mean, I have to deal with it at work, just from some of the people that I work with. But it really is like, it doesn't matter to some people how bad the game is, as long as it's memeable, and granted, there are people who have different tastes in games and teach their own, I suppose. But it's unfortunate that that we're seeing a lot more of, you know, we're seeing a lot more of this from, like, you know, games as a platform. And that sounded cool about 15 years ago. And then the reality of it is exactly what you described, is you give anybody total free reign in an environment, and there's always going to end up being unsafe places that, you know, that pop up from that. And there is no policing. There's, you know, hardly any control over it. And a lot of these companies are so hands off that the only thing that they'll do is implement a report option.
Yeah, because it's gotten so big that, like, that's all they do. And of course, they don't like the negative press because it's literally the biggest gaming platform right now. But they're making gangbusters off it, but they're also not monitoring it. And if they want to keep this going, they need to implement something. Because there's seriously a lot of issues right now with Roblox.
Yeah. It's just very unfortunate that there are going to be at least a few bad things that come up from all of this. And honestly, This isn't the first time. This really isn't the first time. I mean, if you go back 10, 15 years and look at Second Life, that was basically our generation's version of Roblox, right? Total user-generated content. And, I mean, it was full-on fucking, like, real estate, things that you could do in that game. And, and of course, there was, the adult-themed bullshit that, that came, that popped up in there. Every so often, you'd find, like, the virtual brothels or whatever the fuck, it's always going to be a thing with that kind of platform. Is that, is having a platform like that bad, though? I mean, can it be properly regulated? So can it be properly policed so that it's a safe space? Or do we start looking at these games as a platform as a inherently dangerous just because you can't really moderate the content in it? It's rough. It's one of those you have to really like balance the moral there. Be clear, we are definitely not for having any type of adult shit in a kid's game. Totally fucking clear, right? None of that's cool. But I'm just looking at it from from another perspective. Like, can these ever be considered safe spaces? To just let your kids roam free in, and my opinion of that is, as long as it is A, not completely moderated from the get-go, like you can't submit something without it being approved by a human, and B, like, have the submission process, have additional safeguards for that before it even becomes a publicly available thing. It's never going to be, it's never going to be safe.
Yeah, I agree.
You can't rely on after the fact reporting. You've got to stop that shit before it happens. Otherwise, I mean, you let one through. So,
speaking of shady things, UK's been, a lot of UK news going on that's not related to video games right now. But something else that's coming out of the UK is that you have to register a credit card with Steam to prove your age, essentially, now.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
So if you have a card registered in your name, you can use that to purchase games on Steam to make sure that you're old enough to purchase the mature rated games, essentially.
Okay, so how many kids do you know that have credit cards?
That's the point.
Okay. All right. Just I'm just going from, I don't know how it is in UK. I really don't. But here in the States, you can't enter into a credit card contract until you are of legal age. And I believe that is 18.
That is correct.
So if you are 18 to enter into a contract for that, then you are of legal age, and therefore you would be able to get mature rated content games. What?
Yeah,
it doesn't make sense. And I know for a fact that that you can spoof credit card numbers online. easily. Or just use Daddy's card.
Yeah, or Dad just signs up with their account and then the kid buys the stuff off Dad's stuff.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it does literally nothing.
It does nothing to to safeguard kids from buying that. A lot of times, I don't know about you, but I think if I ended up having, I don't know, maybe this is a question I can ask Jason. Hey, Jason. Do your kids have a Steam account?
No.
If they were going to get a Steam account, would that not be under your login? So that you didn't have to buy the games twice or three times or four times?
When possible, yes.
Okay. I mean, I understand Steam family sharing is a thing and that is a possibility, but I mean, you would probably be more apt to just, use your own account and set up something so that you need to put in the password or at least like authenticate when a purchase is made, obviously, so that so that the little ones aren't buying everything on Steam, right? But yeah. It seems like a dumb way to do age verification, to be honest. It's flawed from the get-go.
It's just, another example of legislators not understanding the medium or anything about it and then making laws to try to regulate something so that their support base votes or supports them. It's just another problem with politics, but... speaking of other shitty things, because I just don't have a lot of good news. You guys remember Marathon, right?
Yes.
Did you think it was already dead?
I heard last that it had not been doing very good, and that there was some serious talk happening in Bungie. Outside of that, that was the last I heard.
So there's something kind of silly going on. If you're one of the people that got the beta invite, so they pushed it back, right? It was supposed to release this next month, so September. By the time you're listening to it, it was supposed to have released sometime in September. The tentative date, sometime in March of 2026. They're going to invite a select group of beta testers to test it for 30 days. So from September 8th through Tuesday, October 7th, they have to play for at least 1 hour a day during the schedule window of 3 to 7 p.m. Mountain Pacific time on weekdays and 2 to 8 Pacific time on weekends. If you play it for an hour a day, they're going to pay you a $500 gift card of their choice. But if you only finish part of that, then they'll only give you a partial gift card. But they're literally going to pay people to do it. It's really not that much money when you think about it, right? Like 30 hours for $500 is pretty under minimum wage. But they're going to play test it that way. And a lot of the controversy is it didn't really do anything outside of the norm, right? There was the whole controversy over the stolen art, where it looked like they blatantly plagiarized someone who was pretty prominent online. So, they went back to the drawing board because the public sentiment after the beta test was pretty low. So I guess this is their idea of trying to fix it. But it is by invite only, and it's by people that were already on that list. But it is super interesting that they're going to pay beta testers to do this, because that's not something that normally happens, right?
Well,
I mean, it's cheaper than using a QA team, if you want to be honest.
That's kind of where I was headed with that in my mind is, you could pay a QA team, but beta testers tend to be a... people who want to play the game, and B, people who you hope will be passionate about that game to make it better, right?
Yeah, it's $16.67 an hour if you play an hour a day for 30 days.
How many? $16.67?
Yeah, it's not too bad for what you're doing.
Yeah, I mean, that means...
probably
that
about the same as paying for any QA.
More than 1 hour, though, you're cheapening yourself.
If you're playing it for pay, right? I wonder how much is on the back end for the feedback.
The idea, though, is that you get people who want to play the game and make it better, you know, and you reward them with something. Having it be a monetary value, that's something that's, you know, that doesn't normally happen. You tend to see people who get, like, special, like, cosmetic perks in the game for being a beta tester, or, like, a special title if it's, like, an MMO or some shit, you know?
Right. They're going to get a gift card this time.
Yeah, they're getting
a gift card. It would be a gift card to Blockbuster.
Oh, God.
It'll be a free trial to YouTube. Like, it'll be like a year's worth of like YouTube premium subscription.
It's a gift card to the Bungie shop. It's you're working for Script at this point. It costs Bungie literally nothing. It's an odd way of doing things, but honestly, for what they're looking for from beta testing, you know, from a beta testing standpoint, they're just looking for bodies at this point. I think the negative press on the initial test was so. It was hard enough on them that I don't think that if they didn't incentivize it in some way that they would get enough feedback from their beta test. Most people would be like, you know, signing up for the beta test specifically for like the first week or weekend to see if anything had changed and then bounce out. So I can see them saying, hey, we want you to continually play, make some bug reports, and then see what's changed over time. You know, and if you want to, if you do that, then we'll incentivize. I can get where they're going with it, but I think it's like a last-ditch effort to make, the game relevant. Like, you have to pay your beta testers to beta test your game. And that's saying something.
That's kind of the bigger point I was getting at, is there, because of the backlash from online of this not being a quality game, this is their solution to make sure they get some feedback and testing and try to find people who are actively interested in the game. Honestly, I don't have any interest in those style of games, so for me, like, especially anymore, it's all PvE. If I'm going to do anything multiplayer, it's PvE, and then I've got to find time to get you fuckers together to even do it, so.
Right. You know, it's just, that's just, playing games as you get older. But, it is interesting. If it works and it becomes, it's successful for them, it would be interesting to see how this evolves if beta testing actually does come with a monetary perk. Even if it is minimal, a $15 or a $20, DoorDash gift card, gets a lot of, makes people happy at least, right?
Right.
At very minimum, it pays for the fucking delivery fee. Something, anything, right? If a game that is coming out wanted me to be a beta tester for it and needed to have enough people to beta test it to, to like do a server stress test or whatnot. And they incentivized it by saying, hey, you play X amount of hours or do X amount of feedback or bug reports or do something that actually contributes to the whole process of beta testing, right? Then we'll give you the first content expansion for free. I'd be down for that. I mean, that would be, that would be acceptable to me. It's reimbursing me for my time and, in a way, because yeah, sure, I get to play the game a little early, but I also get to see all of the really rough edges. And Jason, you and Justin, you and I, we saw the rough edges of ESO when that first came out. We were both beta testing for that.
Yeah.
When everything was Microsoft Sam voiced, like, yeah, they didn't have the voice acting in there, so they just had text to speech read off the lines,
which was pretty really silly. Rough. Yeah,
yeah, but it would have been cool if, say, ESO said, "Hey, you go through the entire process of beta testing and and do this, we'll give you the first content expansion for free." Totally down for that. Would I continue to play it? I don't know, but
yeah, I've figured that I'm not as much into MMOs at this point.
Yeah,
I don't have the kind of time for
an example.
Yeah, no, I hear you. I'm in a space right now. If you listen to this show at any amount of time, like the last 5+ years, I just can't do that stuff anymore. But, Jason, I've got like one more piece. Jason, did you have some stuff that I didn't cover? Because I've been talking for a while.
So, there are a couple things, a couple of them. Maybe a little depressing, maybe not. One thing that's not is, according to a recent earnings meeting, CD Projekt Red is ramping up their team staffing again. Continuing to push The Witcher 4 and Cyberpunk 2 through development. Last year, after the after layoffs and everything else, they were down to like 96 people at core. As of a couple months ago, they were up over 450 again. So they're really ramping that up, and apparently, Cyberpunk 2 transitioned into pre-production last quarter, and is a couple cores away from active development. So they're ramping back up again, which is good to see. Some of us were starting to worry after the layoffs what might happen.
Yeah, there's a huge chunk of layoffs, though, that are literally just part of the temporary additions they get during game development, too, right? Like, there are core exactly. teams. The core teams layoff is what you worry about. The QA stuff, right? Like, they are literally there to do QA. They're not there to be part of the core development team. And then there's a lot of other stuff, right? Like, not a lot of places have their own in-home, like, audio production, right? Like, a lot of people hire a separate team for CGI stuff, right?
Yeah.
It's just a thing. So, that's just things to remember. Like, it's... Like, when Ubisoft has layoffs, like, how many people work for Ubisoft? Like, 20,000? Right? And they develop, yeah, like... Two games, a game a year, maybe?
Yeah.
It is nice to know that they're ramping back up again, because it means that they're really taking the development of the games that they have said that they're working on a little bit more seriously. I'm interested in seeing another Witcher game, even if it doesn't have Geralt in it. Because...
Well, they wrote Geralt out of the story.
Huh?
They've already written Geralt out of the story, basically, so, like, it had to be somebody different. And I don't mind, like, Ciri is also a main character, so I don't mind it.
Yeah, well, the thing is that world is way more than just Geralt,
Right.
It's just that the books, the original content followed him around, right? But there is a whole lot more to that whole world that has nothing to do with, you know, his viewpoint and his, you know, his circle of shit that happened to him and, you know, the people he knows. It's, you know, so it would be really nice to see more from that world. And, you know, another cyberpunk, well, fuck, cyberpunk did, you know, gangbusters for him. So, I mean, it had a rough start, you know, but it's evolved into, you know, a pretty goddamn good game. So, yeah, see what they come up with.
And another news, but similar, Crystal Dynamics confirmed a couple days ago that they have been forced to perform a round of layoffs.
Yeah, what's luckily, Crystal Dynamics
the core development team behind the new Tomb Raider game is not affected. But they're letting go of roughly 9% of their staff, which is sad, but I mean, unfortunately, I think, like Justin was saying, that's kind of the industry nowadays. You're not going to see, these large permanent teams staying in place, you know, for long periods of time because game development, one, is slower than it used to be, especially with AAA titles. So, you know, some of these developers don't have the constant inflow of funds from, you know, selling games that they used to.
Yeah. Sorry, my brain's turned off. You got anything else?
No, I think I'm mostly good.
Perfect.
Where can you find us, Jason?
Find us at tiltcast.com. Find us on Facebook and twitter.com/tiltcast. Our YouTube channel is youtube.com/realtiltcast and search for us on iTunes and Spotify. Subscribe.
Find some friends to show. You've got tvgp.tv. They do great things. And with that, it's the end of the show.
All right. Peace.